If someone tells you that you have the Midas touch, that's usually, you know, one of the highest compliments you could possibly receive, right?
Absolutely. In our modern culture, it's just shorthand for financial genius.
Effortless success.
Yeah, phenomenal luck. It suggests a person who just, well, who just can't fail. They start a business, it goes public, they invest somewhere, it skyrockets.
Whatever they do just seems to turn to gold.
Exactly.
We've taken this this ancient idea and polished it until it just gleams with positivity. We use it to praise CEOs, celebrities, highly successful people.
We do.
But the thing is, when you actually go back to the original Greek myth, the real story of King Midas, the tale is, I mean, it's anything but positive. It's a terrifying, devastating, cautionary tale.
It's the ultimate lesson in unintended consequences. If the modern version is all about effortless winning, the original story is about catastrophic loss.
And that's our mission for this deep dive.
It is. To take that familiar idea and go back to its mythological origins to discover what King Midas actually learned about wealth, obsession, and the hidden price of unchecked desire.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Starting even before the famous wish was made, our sources show that Midas wasn't some, you know, upstart trying to get rich quick.
No, not at all. He was already a king known for immense wealth.
So he was already operating from a position of profound abundance.
And that fact is so psychologically important. He wasn't desperately poor and asking for a chance to survive. He was already drowning in riches, and yet he still felt the need for more.
Which already suggests a problem of perspective, not a problem of, say, resources.
Precisely.
So how does a king who is everything end up with this world-changing power? It starts with a simple act of hospitality, doesn't it?
It does. The myth tells us that Midas showed kindness to a visitor named Silenus. Now, Silenus was an elder companion, a tutor to the god Dionysus. So when Dionysus realized Midas had been good to his friend, the god felt obligated to reward him. He offered Midas anything he desired.
Now, this is the moment where we all play that thought experiment, right? It's a major god from the Greek pantheon gave you a cosmic blank check. What would you ask for?
A peaceful life?
Yeah.
Maybe wisdom? Immortality?
The possibilities are endless.
But Midas, his vision was completely grounded in the material. And you have to remember who's granting the wish. Dionysus is the god of wine, frenzy, ecstasy.
Yeah, Voss, really.
Yes, chaotic, overwhelming forces. So when he grants a wish, it often comes with a twist because he deals in excess.
And Midas, who is already steeped in his own internal excess, chose to focus on the one thing that already consumed him.
Gold.
Gold.
He asked for the power to turn everything he touched into gold. It's an incredibly simple, direct, and, well, frankly, a redundant request for a man who already owned vast kingdoms.
It just confirms that for him, enough was not enough. His desire had already metastasized into a full-blown obsession. And what was Dionysus's reaction? Did he just shrug and say, sure, done?
No, the original stories actually indicate a moment of profound hesitation. Dionysus recognized the danger instantly.
He saw it coming.
Oh, absolutely. He specifically warned Midas to think carefully before the wish was made. It was a final chance for Midas to step back from the brink.
But he couldn't see it.
He was completely blinded by this image of infinite wealth. He couldn't hear the warning. He was resolute.
It's just chilling that the one thing he already possessed in abundance became the very foundation of his ruin.
Well, it raises a critical question, doesn't it? Was this a gift? Or was it a customized punishment?
What do you mean?
Dionysus, knowing Midas's character, gave him exactly what he asked for, probably knowing that the flaw in Midas's character, his unchecked greed, would be the instrument of his own downfall.
Okay, so the stage is set. Let's picture the initial reaction. The wish is granted. He must have been ecstatic.
Absolutely thrilled. I mean, imagine that moment of validation. Midas rushes out. Maybe he touches a piece of furniture, a stone in the garden.
And he just watches it transform.
The dull surface just melting away to reveal this shining, perfect, inert weight of solid gold. He must have felt completely invincible.
The power was real. He's walking through his gardens.
Yeah.
A rose bush, a patch of ivy, the trunk of an oak tree, and everything is just hardening into this beautiful,
but lifeless.
A lifeless metal.
For a while, the exhilaration must have been immense. He could walk around his palace, touching the walls, the statues, transforming everything into the ultimate display of opulence. But this is where the story pivots immediately.
Because that power, which seemed like the height of success, instantly made him an alien in his own world.
He couldn't interact with reality anymore.
Not in any meaningful way.
Exactly. The shift from gift to curse was instantaneous. Because, you know, turning a stone into gold might be thrilling, but turning the essentials of life into gold is fatal.
The curse struck at the most fundamental level. Survival.
Imagine how terrifying that must have been. He's probably thirsty from his afternoon of gold making, right? He picks up a cup of water.
And before the liquid can even reach his lips,
it solidifies. A golden vessel filled with essentially golden ice. Not just solid, but completely unusable.
Think about that bite of bread, a grape. All of it just turning into instant, non-nutritious metal in his mouth.
It's a terrifying paradox. He has all the world's wealth at his fingertips, yet he's starving to death.
Gold cannot feed you. Gold cannot quench your thirst.
And that physical panic, the desperation of starvation, only serves as the prelude to the real emotional climax of the story. The hunger and thirst were devastating, but they were only the physical consequence. The real catastrophic cost was personal.
And this is where the sources describe it as the unexpected and unwanted consequence of his greed. He didn't just lose food. He lost connection.
Precisely. In his desperation, his misery, Midas sought comfort. And the tragic peak of the story arrives when he embraced his beloved daughter.
Oh, no.
In that one moment of fatherly need, his obsession took its final unbearable toll. She instantly turned into a cold, hard, golden statue.
Wow. If turning food and water to gold was a shock, this is. Mm. This is the moment the bottom just falls out of his entire world.
Think about the silence in that moment. The weight in his arms. She was no longer a daughter. She was a monument to his failure. The gold he craved became the instrument of his greatest and most agonizing loss.
This one act just synthesized the entire lesson, didn't it?
It did. Wealth, when it's pursued obsessively, it isolates you. And ultimately, it destroys what is most precious.
So, Midas's realization, was it immediate? Did he try to bargain? Or was the horror of his daughter's transformation just so absolute that he got it?
The realization was immediate and total. There was no negotiation left. He realized, in that moment, holding his lifeless daughter, that his overwhelming greed had brought him nothing but misery.
The pursuit of wealth had finally reached its logical, devastating conclusion.
And he immediately begged Dionysus to take the gift back.
So how does it get resolved?
Well, the resolution shows the profound change in Midas' character. Dionysus, seeing his genuine repentance, told him to wash in the river Pactolus.
And as Midas washed,
the terrible power flowed out of him, turning the river sands golden, which is why, legend says, that river was always rich in gold flakes.
That's a powerful image, the curse being purged from him. But the lesson remains.
Absolutely. Once the touch was gone, Midas renounced wealth entirely. He learned a powerful lesson in moderation and humility.
But here's where the modern definition just completely falls apart. The Midas touch isn't a celebration of success. It's a eulogy for a daughter lost to obsession.
The source material is starkly clear on this. The lesson was learned at the cost of his daughter's life. You can't undo that damage.
That tragedy is really the bridge to the deeper moral implication, isn't it?
It is. If we see the myth as a form of moral instruction, it's a powerful illustration of the danger of misplaced value. It's about what we elevate to the position of supreme importance in our lives.
What we worship.
Exactly. The core wisdom, which the sources draw out, is that Midas's wealth, his uncontrolled passion, it became an idol in his life. It was bigger and more important than his family, his sustenance, his own humanity.
And that idol demanded the ultimate sacrifice.
The stories connect this outcome directly to broader ancient wisdom. They specifically quote Proverbs 15.27, "Whoever is greedy for unjust gain troubles his own household."
Troubles his own household. I mean, that perfectly distills the tragedy of Midas.
It's a perfect distillation. His desire troubled his household so severely, he turned his own child into a monument to his failure. The point isn't just that greed is bad. It's that when your drive for one thing, even something generally seen as good, like success, becomes uncontrolled, it warps your priorities.
And it hurts the people closest to you.
Inevitably.
So let's bring this into the 21st century. We may not literally be turning our children into gold statues, but the principle of the Midas touch curse, it's everywhere.
It is. What are the modern idols that demand that same kind of sacrifice of our essential connections?
80-hour work weeks.
That's one. Or constant travel that keeps us away from home. Or the inability to unplug from our devices because the pursuit of the next deal, the next promotion,
has eclipsed our ability to just be present.
Yes. The modern golden statue might be the relationship that just goes cold because we are always chasing the glitter of the touch.
it fundamentally changes how we should view those figures who are always being praised for their Midas touch. We realize that the effortless success they display publicly might be hiding a profound cost paid privately.
In terms of mental health, family connection, or just simple happiness.
The appearance of gold is usually hiding a true famine.
That effortless success story in this context is a profound misunderstanding of the warning. The real Midas touch is a devastating cautionary tale about letting your drive for accumulation consume everything vital around you.
So if we strip away all the mythology, the core reversal is clear. The Midas touch is not a compliment. It's a profound warning about the high price of obsession.
The bitter lesson Midas learn is that the very thing you crave, the thing you elevate above all else, may ultimately destroy what you love the most.
The thing we think will complete us is often the thing that empties our lives.
And this prompts the most critical question the story forces us to confront, one we should all reflect on as we manage our own ambitions. If wealth was Midas's idol and the cost was his daughter's life, then what are the idols in your life? What demands your time, your attention, your loyalty above all else?
More importantly,
what is the price you might already be paying for that idol? What connections are hardening into cold, hard statues while you chase the gleam? That's the true, timeless horror of the Midas touch.